Tell you, thank you for downloading the latest episode of the Indian Startup Show. So today I chat to Dinesh Sumakarthy. He's the co-founder and CEO of Status Labs. It's a health tech startup that have created a unique remote patient monitoring system. They are already in 20 hospitals in India and have saved many lives. So they're doing really well. Talk about how we got started, how the product actually works, at raising 5 million on funding. Dinesh also talks about what should first-time founders be focusing on, and a really great book recommendation as well. So much more. And please enjoy the show. Thank you. Hello, Dinesh. Thank you for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Thank you, Neil. Thanks for having me.
If you could tell listeners what you're building, please.
Yeah, my name is Dinesh. I'm the founder of Stasis. And what we're building is a cloud-connected patient monitoring system to continuously monitor patients inside of the hospital and get them connected to doctors through a smartphone application.
Excellent. Okay. And how did you come up with the idea? Sounds interesting.
I came up with the idea about 5 years ago. I experienced a personal event where my grandfather was in a hospital in my home state of Andhra, and noticed a information gap in the hospital. He was there for COPD, so always coughing, always wheezing. And overnight, his blood oxygen level changed. The nurse's kind of status quo was come around every few hours. Was rushed into the ICU the next morning, being told that we didn't catch the symptom in time. I'm a trained EMT, so I've worked in emergency care in the United States. And as an emergency medical technician, you know, my job was to effectively get information to doctors as quickly as possible.
Right.
So seeing the situation, I knew that it wasn't really a medical problem. We were inside of the hospital. It was really an information gap. The doctors and nurses and even ourselves, we were in the same room, didn't know that something was happening.
And how's it going so far? Can you share some stats?
Yeah, it's been going well. We're in approximately 20 hospitals here in Bangalore, Chennai, and Mumbai. Treated over close to now 5,000 patients on the Stasis system, and have hundreds of doctors using the application every day to, you know, treat their patients remotely.
Excellent. Is that what you expected when you first started?
Yeah, the product vision was pretty similar from day one when we started about 2 years ago. The actual implementation and developing a product for the Indian market definitely took a lot longer than we originally anticipated.
What were the early days like then? I mean, what was the first prototype like, and how long did it take you to get your first customer?
First customer took a long time. If anyone is looking into hardware startups or healthcare startups or international hardware healthcare startups like ourselves, just keep in mind that the MVP is quite large. So before we could even get a check signed by hospitals, we needed to prove out that we could build a safe and effective medical device. We had to do a lot of usability testing since our product utilized kind of the latest technologies, like tablets and you know, mobile apps and web apps. It took us almost, I'd say, close to a year and a half or before we got our first customer.
And how big's the team?
So our team right now is approximately 30 people across both Los Angeles, California, which is one of our headquarters, and Bangalore. Our team is, we do full stack, so everything from engineering, product development, the full product development, manufacturing, all the way to actual sales to customers. So we have kind of verticalized business so far.
Actually, you're from America, so why move to, why do this in India then? Why not do this in America?
Yeah, so I was born in India, so I think there's a little bit of nationality there. But I did live most of my life in the United States, mostly in Dallas and Los Angeles, California. India is really a prime suspect for products in healthcare looking to expand in terms of quantity. So when you look at the Indian market, it has a few things going for it right now. A massive supply-demand gap between number of patients, the number of hospital beds, and the number of doctors available. So that it has one of the strongest gaps in the world. Surprisingly, you know, we're well behind other countries that are generally less developed than us. The other aspect of India is that the smartphone and technology and internet era is booming. You know, almost everyone has a smartphone. Your everything from your Autowalas to your CEOs And they're all on the internet. They're all consuming and they're all trying to utilize the latest technology. So I think these two aspects made it really prime for us to bring a IoT kind of medical device that connects to the internet and puts data to the clinicians, really allows them to accelerate. And I think that's why India was kind of a really great market for us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having that personal background just made it like a, you know, it kind of made the whole equation add up.
In terms of the sales process, and how are you finding that then? Is it like a short sales process? Or, I mean, I would suspect this is an easy sell, right? People need this, right?
People need this. I would not say the sales process is short, simply because, again, we're talking about hospitals, we're talking about B2B business, we're not selling to consumers. So overarchingly, it does take a long time, simply because the number of stakeholders that you impact is a lot. Our product touches patients, it's utilized, the end user is the nurse, the secondary end user are the clinicians who are using it remotely, and you have your admins that are trying to make all the ROIs add up. So we have a lot of stakeholders inside of each hospital that we have to convince of the product. Mm-hmm. It's not generally the idea that's the hard part, it's the execution.
What's the business model then? You know, how do you make money out of this? Is it one-off sale, is it?
No, so we kind of sell the hardware and software either joined together as a single subscription or kind of broken up, where we sell them the hardware and then they can purchase software as required. Since not every hospital needs that remote connectivity for all their beds, we kind of make it easy for them to pick and choose.
So can you give an example of who would use this and why would they use this then? You mentioned the remote connectivity side of things.
Yes. So our typical customer is a hospital. So when you look at the general breakdown of beds, if you look at a 100-bed hospital, you're looking at approximately 10 to 20 beds, which are the intensive care unit, the ICU. That's where most of the critical cases happen, and you're monitoring, and, you know, you have full infrastructure there generally. The problem is, if you look at the rest of the 80 beds, they're generally under-monitored, nurses going around manually measuring vital signs. They don't have the capital for infrastructure, and because there's not as much manpower there, you have a lot of information gap. Those are the 80 beds that we really focus on. So these are kind of like the high dependency units or the step down units inside of a hospital, where a patient who is stable enough to leave the ICU, but still needs to be kind of under constant supervision to ensure nothing bad happens. That's our sweet spot. So those are that's kind of the typical customer profile. Can be anything from a 20 bed hospital all the way to we have clients as large as 350 beds.
What would you say the aims and objectives of in the next 2 years then?
Yeah, in the next 2 years, the goal for Stasis has been always to provide accessible health technology to accelerate proactive healthcare. Proactive healthcare is something that's really core to us, because the idea is that right now healthcare is very much reactive. We respond to symptoms that we see. But in the data-driven world, in a world where we're actually getting more information than a human is built to kind of analyze, we can actually become proactive and start sending alerts before things happen. Because we're able to do this high-resolution monitoring and all the monitoring is being centralized, we're actually building algorithms to determine different aspects of patient deterioration and send alerts to the right people. That part of our verticalization strategy to ensure we have the nurses, the doctors, the patients, the families, all part of our system, is to ensure that we can get the right data to the right people. So really our long-term vision in the next 2 years is treat as many patients on our system as possible, and then provide these kind of proactive alerts so that one doctor, instead of just treating five patients at a time, can treat 10 patients at a time with no more work. If we can increase their efficiency, we can actually solve the supply demand gap in these emerging markets.
Ultimately, how big do you want to go with this then?
the size of the vision is plenty big. You know, just India itself is a massive market. The beauty of medical devices is that you're kind of global in nature. When you build a product that meets international regulation, you can kind of hit multiple countries. So really, we don't really see a short-term limitation to the size of the opportunity for us.
I'm interested, what would this business look like in, say, 50 years' time? You know, obviously you've got AI, robots, machine learning, VR, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think the goal for Stasis will be to continue engulfing as many aspects of manual healthcare. Mm. You know, there's a lot of things that are done manually. So, you know, data entry, documentation, monitoring, prescriptioning. So if we can slowly start engulfing that into a easy to use platform, and then make that available to doctors again remotely, so you don't have this this requirement of being right where, you know, inside the hospital to see how the patient's going. Mm. That's really the future of this product. So, you know, our device itself is a 6-parameter monitor. It sits at the bedside. Mm. And this device, although, you know, is effectively similar to a normal vitals monitor, mm. is completely overhauled on the inside to be much more like a smartphone. Mm-hmm. So it has, you know, full Bluetooth capabilities, Wi-Fi capabilities. Our centralization has even cellular capabilities. So connectivity is going to increase significantly. And we're hoping that we're building the infrastructure in the hospital to drive them towards that digital hospital, that smart hospital. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of widgets will be created that integrate with the Stasis system, and the access to our data will obviously increase in that case. Mm-hmm. And then our abilities to build AIs or algorithms to predict outcomes and kind of send the right alert, right? We're never going to get to the capability of a doctor, but the goal is to empower your clinicians.
That's cool. I noticed a lot of companies are getting into ICOs and blockchains. That seems to be a hot topic. Are you getting involved with that, or are you staying away?
Completely staying away.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, blockchain is it's a really cool concept, and there's many useful implementations of it. We have not identified one for us specifically as of yet.
Well, let's talk about you then. Is this your first startup then?
Yes, this is my first startup. Started this out of college. Went to university at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. So did my undergrad and master's in biomedical engineering there, and started the company right after.
It must have been tough to do a startup and study at the same time, though, and get customers and make money.
We went really full-time after graduation, which was helpful. Prior to that, we did a lot of kind of business plan competitions and market analysis. So we were talking to customers and trying to identify the problem and figure out how to make a viable business out of it before we really got started. And I think that was one of the big reasons why we were very confident when we started, was we had so much research backing us up that this would be viable. Mm-hmm. The technology building actually only started after we graduated. Mm-hmm. As you said, too hard to juggle otherwise.
Is it fun then? Are you having fun with this?
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. You know, the beauty of healthcare is that on one side, you're trying to build a business, you're trying to ensure that your business scales, but on the other side, you're making direct impact to people's lives. In the case where, you know, we get clinicians WhatsApp us telling us, hey, you know, Stasis saved another life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is kind of the most powerful aspect. Mm-hmm. Is we built this technology to prevent issues like I experienced myself, and seeing clinicians stand up and say, yeah, this, you know, it did what it was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. It actually helped someone out. It makes a big impact to us and keeps us really energized.
Mm-hmm. How fast are you growing then? I mean, are you getting like one hospital a month then, or, you know, what kind of traction are you getting?
Yeah, our traction right now, we're in the process of trying to scale up. So we've actually slowed down a little bit in the process of creating a pan-India team. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at all major metros in India to have access to our technology and implementing, I'd say, approximately 2 to 5 hospitals a month is mm-hmm. kind of our run rate right now.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Are you happy with that then?
Yeah, right now... you know, a lot of the process here is ensuring that we don't trip on ourselves. Yeah. It's not necessarily the market opportunity. The market's plenty large. It's about cracking the different models, ensuring the support structures are there, the technology is robust. I think many times startups get caught up in growth, but in healthcare, it's more about risk mitigation mm-hmm. and risk reduction than it is about just the crazy e-commerce growths.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, cool. Well, just quickly talk about investment. You recently raised $5 million in seed funding. Is that correct?
Yes. As of 2016, we raised $5 million from a couple venture capital firms in both the United States and a lot of angel investors in both India and the US.
Mm-hmm. And how long did that take? Talk about the process. You must have done a lot of pitches then and presentations.
metric amount of pitches and presentations. So me and my co-founder, Michael, we both studied at university together and started the company together. So Michael did a lot of the main focus on fundraising, okay, financials, and focusing on the health of the company and our scaling requirements. You know, when you are looking in the hardware healthcare space, it's really important to understand how much money you actually need. Many times people are just trying to get their first million of investment, and they forget that that first million won't get them to a milestone. Mm-hmm. And if you don't plan for your milestones, you really can't continuously, you know, raise money and keep growing. So that's a very important aspect to keep in mind. And yes, if you are looking to build a international medical device company, it will take a lot longer to raise money than many other areas.
A lot of companies don't get financing, but you did. Why do you think that is?
That's a hard question. I think a lot of companies are, when you look at investors, and one of our investors is actually from our accelerator, Techstars. Techstars' motto has always been team, and then product market. So really focusing on team was really important to us. We were a young group of founders trying to, you know, tackle the world. And our passion and our ability to remain coachable and ensure that when we were hearing advice, we weren't just discarding it, but rather trying to implement it into our workflows. And our continuous drive to pretty much do anything we needed to do to make the business happen made it seem like this gargantuan task would definitely be attempted with 110% effort. I think that's why most of our investors really joined us in the early days, is they really believed in Michael and myself, and our willingness to, you know, if needing, fly to India in the course of the night to get what we needed to get done.
You mentioned your co-founder, Michael. How's he finding India?
So he spends he spends about 50% of time here, 50% in Los Angeles. So we actually, while we are tackling the Indian market, we are also investigating the U.S. market with our products. So that's his principal focus. But he loves India. Actually, almost all of my team in the Los Angeles office has made their way here to India for multiple weeks or months even. So it's been actually quite enjoyable to kind of bridge the two worlds.
What's the traction like in the U.S. then? Are you getting lots of hospitals?
U.S. is so young. U.S. is young, so our product is now under, it's in the FDA to get approval. So until the approval goes through, we can't actually begin commercialization in the U.S., but we are working with some strong medical systems who are very keen to implement right now, kind of in the POC phase.
Okay, so we're in 2018 now. How would you sum up 2017 then?
2017 was fantastic. We entered the market commercializing only about 6 months ago. So the amount of motion we've made in 6 months, I think, has been really exciting for us. A lot of team growth, which if you're an entrepreneur listening to this, always take into account how long it takes to hire a team that you like, train the team, onboard them, and then before that they're at their, you know, 90% execution level. So building out a team actually takes quite a long time. So 2017 was a lot of that team growth, moving into a Bangalore office, beginning commercializations with hospitals and large hospital chains, you know, brand name ones here in India, and now expanding our product, you know, pan-India.
What about building the culture then? Or are you just like focused on, you know, getting us on board as many hospitals as possible?
Oh no, culture is super important. In the early days, the culture is really driven by the earliest employees. How you work, your mindset about work, you know, seeing work as an opportunity to continuously grow and enjoy, and not seeing it as laborious is extremely important. And I think when you have really strong culture amongst your earliest employees, it kind of naturally penetrates to the rest. So despite our rapid growth, I would say that our whole team is under one kind of cohesive culture. And I have always found it very impressive that when someone new joins our team, in the scope of their first week in the office, they quickly jump on board. They completely understand how we work, how we're very transparent, open to each other. And we're always looking to improve each other. There's no hardship of asking why or trying to understand a decision. And so strong values really drive culture.
Excellent. Last few questions then.
Sure.
What's like the main quality an entrepreneur should have?
I think the main quality for an entrepreneur, the one that I think you will not be able to succeed with without, is a strong leadership mentality. You know, the other one that comes to mind is kind of grit, like really being able to strive through the tough times. But the problem is, I think I see enough people that have the grit that are not able to rally a team behind them. Mm-hmm. And if you can't rally a team, you can work day and night 20 years and not accomplish a goal, simply because it's too large for one human being to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And so I would say leadership capabilities, understanding how you can build out a team, manage them effectively. And the real role of a leader is to always be there to support your team. One of the things that me and Michael did in the early days is we, we're both first-time founders coming right out of college. Mm-hmm. We realized that we had to be very pretty much open to ensuring that every person we hired was smarter than us. Mm-hmm. If we were hiring people that weren't smarter than us, we would never be able to succeed. And so we really surrounded ourselves with some of the brightest talent we could find, and inspiring them about our vision. And I think those leadership qualities are pretty critical if you want to bring large impact through your startup.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And what should first-time founders be focusing on?
It'd probably be a better question during my second startup. A little bit hard to answer this one. I would say first-time founders should should really solve. We know a lot of things. We know many times we might know what we don't know, but you don't know what you don't know. Mm. It's really the biggest struggle for a first-time founder, is you might not even know that of the information that you're missing. And so you need to work very aggressively, surround yourselves with mentors and people who can continuously advise you, because they're the ones who can quickly identify, hey, you completely forgot about this subsection, and at least bring it into your purview. After that, of course, it's your decision how you act upon that information, but it's very critical that you don't have a blind spot. And frankly, that's impossible. You will have one, but you want to minimize it. So that's what I would advise first-time founders, is ensure that you're minimizing your blind spots as much as possible, so you're at least aware of all the problems that you might have to face.
Actually, have you got any like book recommendations or blogs that you read that help you?
Yeah, I'm actually reading a book right now called Never Split the Difference. Me and Michael decided we'd read this together. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting book about a FBI hostage negotiator discussing negotiation tactics. Okay. And if you think about it, in the notion of a hostage negotiator, it's an all-win situation. Yep. You can't give one hostage for 10 hostages out, right? You have to get all 11 out. Mm-hmm. So he really talks about how human psychology works and different kind of communication techniques to ensure that you're able to give the other person the guidance they require to reach your destination. And if I always found that quite brilliant. So it's a great book. I'm only halfway through that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, last question then. For people who want more information on Stasis Labs, what must they do?
Our website, stasislabs.com, has a ton of information. We are active on LinkedIn and Facebook and stuff like that, so definitely just follow us, and you'll get kind of all the inside scoop of what's happening at Stasis.
Dinesh, thank you very much for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time, Neil.
Cheers, buddy. Thank you. And thanks to Dinesh for coming on the show today. And that's the end of the show. If you liked it, please leave a rating or review of the show. Just search for the Indian Startup Show on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Downcast, Instacast, Pocket Cast, and Apple TV. If you're building something exciting, please send me an email, hello@neilpatel.co, or tweet @IndianStartupSH, or go to facebook.com/IndianStartupShow. We'd love to connect. And if you're interested in creating your own podcast in 2018, then check out my class on skillshare.com. called Getting Your Podcast Off the Ground. I've been teaching this for over 16 months now. I've had 600 students, and it's had great testimonials. So check out the link in the show notes to get started. Advantages of doing your own podcast: you get to build something amazing that's your own 100%. You have 100% creative control. You can do whatever you want, and it's a lot of fun as well. So check out the link in the show notes. Thank you for listening to the Indian Startup Show. Thank you and goodbye.